Welcome to Do Nothing But Read, the podcast book club, episode 24, David Sedaris and Hipster Literature. In this volume, we talk about French speech impediments, elfin humorists, and wizard hormones. From the home of Harry Steenbach, Wisconsin, I'm Amanda.
And from the home of Carl Sagan, New Jersey, I'm Brandon.
How are you?
It's early. This is another early record.
Hey, so I'm in Central Time. I'm an hour earlier than you are.
Yes. So if our voices sound raspy.
Yeah, I kind of sound like an old man right now.
But that could be a good thing for radio.
Oh, yes.
Deep voice.
Yeah, we should get started.
Coming at you. David Sedaris talk.
Sunday. Well, Saturday.
Saturday. Let's get started.
Today, we're going to finally finish up our little humor arc. The last time we talked about humor, we talked about John Hodgman, who wrote the book The Areas of My Expertise, and then he wrote...
John Hodgman, a famous minor television personality offering more information than you require on subjects as diverse as the past, as there's always more of it, the future, as there's still some left, all the presidents of the United States, the secrets of Hollywood, gambling, the sport of the asthmatic man, including hermit crab racing, strange encounters with aliens, how to buy a computer, how to cook an owl, and most other subjects. That's the full title.
Yes. That is totally John Hodgman's style, to make something sort of long, drawn out, and ridiculous, because I think he kind of has a persona when he's writing. I mean, he definitely has a persona when he's writing or when he's doing comedy. Yeah. But today we're going to talk about David Sedaris, who is one of my favorite writers in general and one of my favorite humorists specifically. And the first David Sedaris book I read was Me Talk Pretty One Day, and it was for a class in college, actually, and I'd kind of heard of him, but I didn't know what kind of writer he was, and I actually thought that Me Talk Pretty One Day was like a memoir of someone with a speech impediment. Like, I didn't realize that it was actually, which it kind of is, sort of, but I didn't realize that it was supposed to be funny, and then I started reading it and couldn't read it in public because I would have fits of laughter. And in reality, the title essay is about learning French while living in Paris with David Sedaris' partner, Hugh, who just seems like such a lovely guy. Like, I don't know, reading these essays, I just want to be friends with Hugh. So David Sedaris has written many books and many essays, and he's been on many episodes of This American Life. But he's written Barrel Fever, Me Talk Pretty One Day, Naked, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, Holidays on Ice, and When You're Engulfed in Flames, among others, and then he has a new one out, too.
Yeah, it's, he's just got, and he's got a ton of little things, like essays and
he's edited a bunch of stuff, too.
Yeah, like, maybe The New Yorker. I don't know how I would put it. probably The New Yorker. Like, okay. Like the little, like, you can find him all over the place, right. McSweeney's and stuff. So.
Yeah, and that's his style. Like, if you are familiar with McSweeney's, it's sort of a very tongue-in-cheek literary magazine website thing.
It's a publication, technically, but they also do a website. Right. And an iPhone app and a lot of things.
Right.
But he's part of the same group, gang, as Dave Eggers and Michael Chabon and John Hodgman. They're all run in the same circle.
Right.
Literary circle.
And this circle is a very intelligently humorous circle where, I mean, his sense of humor, again, I'm having issues pinning down what someone's sense of humor is like, but David Sedaris' sense of humor, I think, is just part of his personality, which it's not, he doesn't like, he obviously writes to be funny, but I think he just also, that's just part of who he is.
I think, of all of these guys, because including John Hodgman, but like, if you think about all these people that fall into this smart, let's call it hipster literature,
right?
that it doesn't throw the punchline out. It's very British in the way that it works, because the other writers are very funny themselves. It's just they're not considered humorists. It's something that if you don't understand it, if you can't get it, I was out with friends of mine who are dating, and they apparently had never talked about David Sedaris before, and I forget how it got up. I didn't bring it up. Someone else brought him up. And the girl said, I love David Sedaris. And then the guy was like, I hate him. And they, like, you could see they both had never known this about each other.
And, like, a little moment of panic.
Yeah. And they've been dating for, like, 3 years. But it's... If you weren't born or taught at an early age how to get subtle humor, then you might have a severe reaction against David Sedaris.
Right.
I'm just because I love him. I love him. I love all of that type of humor. But I very fully aware that I can't recommend him to many people unless I know their sensibilities.
Yeah, he's very polarizing. Like, if we've talked about a lot of authors on this podcast, I think who are polarizing, and he's definitely one of them. Where either, like, it's maybe not polarizing, maybe there's more than two poles in my brain, but where you either love him, you hate him, or you have no idea who he is.
Yeah, you have to sort of be willing to go along for the ride, because it's like sitting with someone that just is rambling.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There's a structure to the rambling.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't be willing to go along for it, I think it can be a tough read.
Right.
If you're not willing to sit there and, like, British humor, he plays with the medium itself.
Right.
And what a book can do, or what a short story can do.
Right.
And if you're not willing to throw some of your conceptions about, I want my story to have a beginning, a middle, and an end with an arc, and I want it to read like a book, if you can't, like if Monty Python, if you don't understand that these guys are playing with television and what television can do, and it's not going to be what you're used to, then don't try to go after David Sedaris.
Well,
don't try.
And I don't know, just playing with the medium, it brought into my mind one of my favorite stories from his collection Holidays on Ice, which I highly recommend that you read in the upcoming Christmassy holiday season.
Yes, that's going to be something I'm starting very soon.
Yeah.
I just sort of come upon it. I'm
so
like, this
good.
Sounds so good for...
Yeah. Well, one of the stories, it's one of his first stories, and the first story of his that was on NPR, and it was sort of the story that made him become famous. It's called Santaland Diaries. But then there's another story in this collection that if you don't get it, then you don't get it, this story. Yeah. It's called Season's Greetings to Our Friends and Family, with 3 exclamation points. And it's a, like Christmas letters that people send out where they're like, this year we had lots of changes in our family, like those kind of things. It's one of those that, like, is written completely seriously. And at the beginning you're like, this is not funny at all. But then the family starts getting, it's like, 25-page long Christmas letter, because that's how long those stupid things are.
Yeah.
And by the end of the Christmas letter, you're like, this family is so messed up, because, halfway through they're like, and then we found out that we have a new family member because my husband is a whore. And, like, stuff like that, we were like, oh my God, I love David Sedaris. So he plays with what fiction can be.
And he based it started with his working at a department store as an elf.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's actually something that, and I can definitely picture him being a department store elf. He looks like an elf. I don't want to seem like, because I hate when people get anti-hipster, I don't want to seem like a hipster that's saying, oh, you won't understand it's only for us up in our
ivory hipster
Williamsburg
towers.
I'm just saying that, warning people, because I don't want them to get into something and then go, oh, well, you recommended it. I know that's certain different strokes for different folks, and my humor falls very firmly into him. It's like his character, he creates characters like Wes Anderson or the Coen brothers do.
Right.
he creates characters like Dickens did, where they're very real but very off.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And my only full book I've read some shorts and other things, mm-hmm. was Naked.
Mm-hmm.
I own a pile of his books. I just never have gotten into them
right
through because I own a lot of books.
Yeah.
I have a library. I wish I had a library.
Good.
It's a fictional memoir cut into short essays, mm-hmm. about growing up and his family. And it's none of it's, I'm sure some of it's inspired by life, but none of it's really real.
Yeah.
Great little characters. It doesn't feel like you're reading a book at times. It just, you know, it doesn't really go anywhere, but the whole ride is hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of his more popular books. I think his best-selling one is When You're Engulfed in Flames, right? I think that's his best.
I think seller. It might be that or Me Talk Pretty One Day, because I know that Me Talk Pretty One Day was sort of the one where, like, that's where a lot of people started out reading David Sedaris, I think.
Yeah.
And all of his books, for the most part, are, like, the fictional memoir style into short essays. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, I'm an enormous proponent of short stories and short essays because you can just sort of pick a book up and flip somewhere and read a story and then put it down.
But they're always, his books are always themed in a certain,
they are always, like, themed, right? Like,
you read them together and they all make
right.
some sort of narrative sense.
Yeah, like Me Talk Pretty One Day is a lot of it's about language and about sort of identity, because David Sedaris is gay and a lot of his stories are kind of about, like, well, I knew I was gay when I was, like, 5. Like, why didn't no one else figure this out? And, yeah. Like, there's a fantastic, really awkward story in Me Talk Pretty One Day about how he learned to play the violin. And, it's like, he, like, sang to his violin teacher, who looked at him with this, like, look of horror and like, I don't know. It's just, like, one of the most awkward stories in the world. And I actually usually skip that one because it makes me so uncomfortable to read it. 'Cause it's so, it's so real that it's, like, hard to read. You know, like, that's his, I really love that style where you can't tell if it actually happened or if it's, like, a fictionalized nonfiction.
Yes, yes. He's a real comedian's,
mm-hmm.
I want to call him a humorist.
Right.
He's a real comedian's humorist. I know Jon Stewart is a big fan, mm-hmm. of his. There's references to him and his works in a lot of comedy. We haven't said that he's a frequent contributor to My God, Ira Glass's This American Life.
Yes.
So, you know, he falls into the This American Life,
mm-hmm.
milieu as well. and he's, one thing I just recently learned is I always had a suspicion,
mm-hmm.
but 'cause it's not that common of a name, but he's, Amy Sedaris's brother.
Right.
And she's from Strangers with Candy and a variety. She's from a variety of other things.
She's fantastic.
She's great, too. Not the same kind of humor, but close.
Right, right.
Very close. You know, I thought for a while, at my first, I thought that before I knew that he was gay, I thought that they were married and they found their brother and sister, and that makes a lot more sense. This is just without Wikipediaing, just
right.
watching television
right.
and noticing things.
Right.
Yeah, so he has a new book out right now, just came out like last week or the week before. And it's, so this is all very timely. Good thing we waited.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called, and this one I might jump to before. Maybe I'll probably read Sandland Diaries just because it's in the right season.
Right.
But it's called Squirrel Meets Seeks Chipmunk, A Modest Bestiary.
Oh.
And I was watching an interview with him on The Daily Show.
Oh.
And he said how he got this idea was he was reading African fables.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, well, I could do a much better job than these. And so it's like, fables with animals, like the structure of a fable, you know,
mm-hmm.
an animal story that tells a moral, but with modern morals and modern themes to the stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the animals are going on dates and things. So, it sounds great. It sounds exactly my kind of book.
Right. Well, I thought that, like, you know, just to give people a little bit of a taste of David Sedaris, I would want to read, like, three paragraphs from the essay Me Talk Pretty One Day from the book of the same name. Okay. And this is about him in French class. The story is about him taking French classes when he moves to Paris with his partner, Hugh. And he figures out that he basically speaks French like he has mental problems. So he's in class, and there are these two Polish girls, both named Anna. So here we go. Two Polish Annas raised their hands, and the teachers instructed them to present themselves by stating their names, nationalities, occupations, and a brief list of things they liked and disliked in this world. The first Anna hailed from an industrial town outside of Warsaw, and had front teeth the size of tombstones. She works as a seamstress, enjoying quiet times with friends, and hated the mosquito. "Oh, really?" the teacher said. "How very interesting. I thought that everyone loved the mosquito. But here, in front of all the world, you claim to detest them. How is it that we've been blessed with someone as unique and original as you? Tell us, please." The seamstress did not understand what was being said, but knew that this was an occasion for shame. Her rabbity mouth huffed for breath, and she stared down at her lap as though the appropriate comeback were stitched somewhere alongside the zipper of her slacks. The second Anna learned from the first and claimed to love sunshine and detest lies. It sounded like a translation from one of those Playmate of the Month data sheets. The answer is always written in the same loopy handwriting. Turn-ons. Mom's famous five-alarm chili. Turn-offs. Insecurity and guys who come on too strong.
Yes, so that's an example of his kind of slice of life writing. His slice of absurdist life. I think if you haven't heard about David's... I know many people have... Mm-hmm. Heard about David Sedaris. Like, the one when you're engulfed in flames is always in the front, and Barnes and Noble of, like, the aisles. I think because the people at work at my Barnes and Noble really love him. He's like always there.
Yeah.
you know, check him out. If you enjoy, hipster literature.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to call it. That movement of writers. The Williamsburgian.
Yeah. If you enjoy, like, smart, funny stuff that's very tongue-in-cheek and very dry, give David Sedaris a try. Well, Brandon, WTF are we reading?
Okay. Well, since Conan is back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't missed one episode yet, and I plan not to miss another episode for life.
Good.
So, this is starting like 2003, mm-hmm. like once I got to college, I had watched almost every Conan episode. I was very proud of it.
Oh, wow.
So, I was very upset when he left. Mm-hmm. I love late night television. Mm-hmm. It's one of my late night talk shows. It's one of my just weird loves. Mm-hmm. I love that world. I love reading about that world. It's fascinating to read about that world. And so I downloaded a sample of The War for Late Night.
Yeah.
And it's by Bill Carter, who wrote The Late Shift, which was a very best-selling book about the fight between David Letterman and Jay Leno,
mm-hmm.
For Johnny Carson's spot on The Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote a sequel, which would be the fight for the Tonight Show again, between Conan O'Brien and Jay Leno, and I was recommended, but I heard about the book on Howard Stern, who was talking like he was gushing about how good the book was, and so I had to read it because, like I said, I love reading these books. I had read the Live from New York book. You know, it's something about late night television that inspires people to go nuts,
mm-hmm.
because it's just such a hard job, and these people become so in love with their spots and everything, and just there's so much business involved because they're high rated shows, and
mm-hmm.
it's you couldn't write fiction as intriguing as these stories about late night television.
Yeah.
Going back to Steve Allen, you know, mm-hmm. like all the way back to the beginning. And so I downloaded a sample, loving it so far. I'll buy the sample when I'm done. I'll buy the full book when I'm done mm-hmm. with the sample. But the samples are big. They're like giant now.
Wow.
So I'll tell you how it goes, but it's
cool.
kind of – it's for the right time because, you know, Conan's coming back. It all – He put the book out at a very good time.
That's cool.
Very timely.
Yeah, well, right now, and unfortunately I don't have cable, and I know you can watch them online, but I have not done that yet, but I will. So I love Conan so much. Right now I'm waiting for my copy of Full Dark, No Stars, which is Stephen King's new book, to come in, because my friend Mark graciously bought me a copy, because remember Neil Gaiman decided to do sort of like a book Christmas on Halloween this year? Mm-hmm. Mark decided that he hadn't bought anyone a book for that he decided to make it a late book Halloween or whatever it was called, and so to buy me a book. So I am just waiting for that to come in, and then I'm going to devour it. And I've sort of poked around at some reviews, and it only has like 3 stars on Amazon, but I mean it only has 34 reviews so far. But
it's getting good reviews. It hasn't made like a gigantic, you know, thing. It's like he's not someone that's gonna go on like talk shows or he doesn't need to. He's gonna sell more books than they can make, but
I was just about to say more books than Jesus, but I don't know if that
Jesus sold a lot of books.
He did.
The Bible is in the best selling book of all time.
Right.
He's a very popular author.
Yeah.
He's on the New York Times best selling list. He has a Prince Award and a Caldecott.
For the best illustrated children's book.
I had an illustrated Bible.
I think I did too. Well, every week we do book news.
Mm-hmm.
So what book news is there? The first book news, as we were just talking about it, is that Stephen King released a new book.
Yes.
So I will let you guys know how that is when I read it, which I'm very excited about. And then next week is something really exciting for all of us.
Yes.
Fantasy nerds.
It's Harry Potter.
I don't have tickets yet. Are they all sold out everywhere?
Well,
I live in Wisconsin, so whatever.
We bought our midnight tickets. We have to go on midnight to see Harry Potter.
Yeah.
My brother and I have to see Harry Potter on midnight.
I have to see if there's even any theaters here doing that.
They have to.
Yeah.
The ones, actually, the one by me, I didn't sign. I'm not this crazy, but it's something called like the Harry Potter Experience.
Oh.
It starts at 6 p.m. that night. So I don't think they can fit in every movie, but I think they might play like cut up versions of each movie.
Holy banana.
And then like they'll play like, I think they're playing like abridged versions of every movie and then the new movie.
That I hope they would give you little breaks and snacks.
I'm sure they do. Well, not the snacks. That's where they make all their
money.
Oh,
that's true.
but yeah, I bought the midnight tickets. It's going to be huge. It's the first part of the end. This is when they're so full of hormones that they're
bursting.
They literally
out.
Explode. They literally explode with hormones.
Yeah.
and I don't know. The last book I have weird feelings about. I don't like how you spend so little time away from Hogwarts. And
yeah.
It probably will make for a better movie. It's just as a book, I didn't really appreciate.
Right.
Not being at Hogwarts. I don't know. Yeah. That was my. I think a lot of people I talked to had that same feeling.
I want to reread the last book. I think. Maybe that'll be my next project.
Well, what I do usually do is I listen to the audiobook beforehand, because I can usually finish that. I'll probably set the audiobook like on Monday, and I'll just skip, jump it, you know, just so I can get it back in my head.
Yeah.
But I'm interested about where it ends.
Yeah.
About where they separate it. There's a good place for them to do it, if I remember.
Mm-hmm.
If my suspicions are correct, it probably will end there.
And then the last movie comes out next year.
It's sometime in the summer. Like it won't be a full year.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
So that they'll get summer. I think
for a while they were like in November and then like in July.
Yeah, they're gonna bring that back. I think it's gonna end when Ron leaves. It's like a Two Towers kind of thing. Where like you know the Two Towers.
Yeah.
They made it to a Fellowship of the Ring. Although the books don't end that way, they made it so the movie, which was a really good idea, ended when the Fellowship fractured.
Oh.
So and then Empire Strikes Back ends with the, you know, Harry Potter blatantly rips off every other epic story before it. So I think they'll end the first movie when Ron leaves, because it's about half, a little a little more than halfway.
Yeah, and I think that leaves some room because, you know, I'm very curious how they're going to do, like, no spoilers, but I'm very curious how they're going to do the last chapter of the last book.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to want most of the second movie for the Battle of Hogwarts.
Yeah.
I think that they're not going to want to do the battle in an hour. I think they're going to do the battle in, like, an hour and a half, hour
40. Oh, my God. I really want to reread it now because now I'm, like, remembering things about that book that are amazing.
Yeah. So, Harry Potter is coming out. Other book news is starting next year, the New York Times will start ranking ebooks bestsellers.
Ooh, that's cool.
So I'm
surprised they don't do that already.
I'm surprised as well, but I the New York Times has been sort of slow in embracing the electronic medium.
Oh, and yeah.
So in general, they have, and that's why they're having trouble. The iPad's been out for a year, and like 2 weeks ago, they just made it so that you can read the entire newspaper. You can only read like 6 articles a day before. So they're slow.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I'm sort of coming around to e-readers.
Black Friday's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
All the Black Friday things have been, not all, but most of them have even leaked. And Best Buy's just came out yesterday. And there is a $100 Nook.
What?
Best Buy. $100 Nook. I said there was gonna be. I said it. I said a sub $100 ebook reader, and they had it's a Nook. I'm glad about that. Yeah, Nook's a good.
I just don't want to go to Black Friday anything.
I love it. See, that's why you moved to the Midwest, and I'm still here in the middle of the malls.
No, dude, people still get crazy here. Like I slept when the Wii came out. I slept on a sidewalk on a piece of cardboard for it in a mass of people. Like
yeah,
you know, people are still insane here, but. I would rather just take a nap than go to Black Friday.
I love Black Friday. I love it. I don't stand in lines anymore. I only did that twice, but it's a good time. It's a good time to go during the day. Just experience. Even if you're not going to buy anything, just experience it. Get out there.
I'm going to be in Chicago on Black Friday this year. Holy bananas. Maybe I'll go to something.
It's good to go out there. Experience humanity at its worst. a great story is... our friend did a mission in Cambodia.
Uh-huh.
He had been away from corporate U.S. commercialism, capitalism for 2 full years living out in rice paddies in the forests in Cambodia for 2 years, right? Came back, had trouble speaking English. And what did we do the first day?
Oh, God.
We brought him... It was a big mistake. We brought him to Best Buy's flagship store in Paramus.
Oh my God.
I've never seen it happen. I've never seen someone have a social anxiety attack.
Oh my God.
But in the middle of the store, he started like shaking.
Oh, Joe.
He had to leave. Oh. I felt so awful. It just never struck us that he would have trouble with that much humanity and spending in one place.
Yeah.
When you've been away from it for so long. But that's America. Thanks for listening to this episode of Do Nothing But Read. For more of this show and general geekery, check out themoderndaypirates.com. And while you're there, you can find all the David Sedaris books mentioned in this episode, and if you buy them through those links, which some of you have done, so thank you, you'll help us out. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and while you're there, give us a rating, which also some of you have done, and that's awesome. For more of Amanda's book reviews and views, go to dnbrd.org. You can follow me on Twitter and Goodreads at BB Werner.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Goodreads at Epistemophilia, spelled Epistemophilia. Happy reading!